that authenticity when it comes to your culture and walking the talk is a difference maker when it comes to recruiting and retaining talent. And it's just an important thing to remember.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Destination Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Stoker. We've got another excellent show for you today. It's a topic that it's kind of funny. I talked about it a lot on our other show, the Travel Vertical Podcast. We haven't discussed it near as much on the Destination Marketing Podcast. There has been a lot of changes in the labor market, especially in the tourism industry over the last, 2 to 3 years, obviously. And I wanted to make sure that I brought in the right people to discuss this topic and maybe help everybody that's dealing with whether it's shortage of labor or trying to get good people to be interested in their jobs or whatever it is. I wanted to make sure that we had the right people to talk about it. And I can't think of anybody better to do so with than our friends at Searchwide Global. My friend Cambria Jones is somebody I have been trying to schedule a recording with for a long time. She was at a destination in Texas before, and now she's at Searchwide Global managing all of their marketing. And I've also got Mike Gamble, president and CEO of Searchwide Global, and I think these are the two right people to answer some of my questions on this. So I want to welcome both Mike and Cambria to the show.
Thanks, Adam. Great to be here.
Yeah, thrilled to have you guys. So I've got a couple of questions I like to ask everybody. You've both heard the show. You're familiar with it, so you know where I'm headed with this. Cambria, why don't we start with you? I'd love to have you tell us first your dream destination. If you could go anywhere in the world, Cambria, where would it be?
You know, I think Bali is next on my list, and for no other reason than it's just really beautiful from the pictures I've seen, and it just represents everything Zen, which I can always appreciate.
I like that. So I've seen lots of pictures, videos of Bali, and I've in reading up on it, it actually sounds like one of the more affordable international destinations that you can go to as well. Is that correct?
Absolutely, from what I've researched.
See, that's enough to move it up the bucket list for me right there. And so what is it about Bali that attracts you, I guess, other than what we already talked about with the affordability? What attractions or parts of the destination are most appealing to you?
Yeah, you know, something for me, I always love to meet the people and just kind of experience their culture. So I haven't been able to explore that part of the world quite yet. So I'm really excited about that. And like I said, the Zen, that just goes back to it. I just feel like you just have the opportunity to kind of meditate and take in the beautiful nature and things like that. So that's what's attracting me most.
I love it. Okay, that's great. Mike, how about you?
Yeah, Adam, I have two, but I'll pick the most recent one that I just feel like I need to get to, and that's Dubai. I haven't been to Dubai yet, and I am very anxious to get there.
You know, Dubai is one of those places that when I hear people talk about it that have been there, it almost sounds like it's on a different planet, that it's such a unique place. But what part of Dubai is it that makes it really appealing to you?
Yeah, you know, I'm intrigued by the development, but also the innovation. And coupled with, it just seems like there is a little bit of something for everyone. I've heard such great stories, but I think visiting from a business perspective would be interesting.
Absolutely. Okay, I like that. And then I wanted to hear briefly from both of you, and maybe we'll stick with Mike and go back to Cambria after. Mike, one of your favorite travel memories that really stands out to you? Anything stick out as you look back through your life?
Yeah. Oh, yes. I mean, many, but usually family vacations. I have four kids, but Kauai was probably our best trip. And it stands out because it just felt like we were discovering parts of that island for the first time for anyone. And it was just a great family memory more than anything.
Oh, how cool. So I've been to Maui. I haven't been to Kauai, but everybody that goes there tells me that it's just amazing. And it's almost the remoteness of it. Like you said, it feels like you might be the first one to step foot in the part of the island that you're on. A lot of people talk about that the remoteness of the island and the ability to really just get away from everything is pretty appealing.
Very much so. Yeah.
I like it. Okay. Well, I guess it's still there on my bucket list then after you telling me your experience. Cambria, how about you?
Well, I want to break the rules a little bit and give you two favorite memories.
Here we go, already.
If I can. The first that always stands out is when I took my first solo trip in my early 20s to the UK, and I hit all the bumps that you would expect as a young solo traveler. But I think that's when I really fell in love with travel. Like, it unlocked a whole new level. I was able to go see and experience things that I had only read about, from taking a train to Paris and having lunch in the Eiffel Tower, and just all of those things really always, you know, stay in my memory. But the other one is actually in Dubai. One year, my mother and I were able to travel over there, and we spent Mother's Day doing a desert safari in Dubai. And that's just such a special memory. And it was so awesome to get to experience that together.
Well, there you go, Mike. There's somebody who can be your tour guide there in Dubai.
Perfect.
Cambria, when you went, did you say you went by yourself to Europe?
Yes, I did. That was my first solo trip that I can remember.
And did you stay in hostels, or was it in hotels, or was it a mixture of both? How did that work?
Well, luckily it was early 20s, but post college, so I was able to get a hotel and spend some time over there. And I actually did a course while I was over there as well at the London School of Public Relations. So I stayed nicely, but not luxury for sure.
Nice. So you found the sweet spot there in the middle, it sounds like.
Yes.
Was it scary traveling by yourself?
It was, but it was that good kind of scary. Like, it unlocked this whole new level. Like, you know, you run into those bumps, but to have that sense of accomplishment that you can do it and you survived, it just kind of sparked that travel bug for me. And I've been doing it ever since.
Awesome. You know, it's funny. I'm not a solo traveler. I actually, you know, there's a lot of men that kind of feel like it's really manly to go camp by yourself and go into the wilderness for, I've got a brother-in-law that, you know, he goes to Canada on his own where there's grizzly bears and everything. And I'll be honest with you, 3 hours by myself in the woods and I'm a little freaked out, you know? So I really admire people that can go do the solo travel thing, because I think it would be a really unique experience. But for some reason, the security of having someone that I know and am comfortable with around me is usually where I default to.
Understandable.
Well, let's dive into both of you and how you ended up where you are. Cambria, we'll just stick with you, and we'll go back to Mike. Tell us about your journey. I mean, obviously, you've been on the DMO side, and now you're more on the private side with Searchwide. What led you there?
Sure. Well, you know, I went to undergrad for mass communication, and I had my minors in public relations and advertising, and I just knew I loved PR, and I thought that would definitely be the way I go. I ended up in a market research firm right after college, and then transitioned over to a digital agency. I started off in the social media department when it was pretty much just Facebook and Twitter, and managing a baseline of accounts from everything from plumbers to dentists and everything in between. And then transitioned again over to the account management side for their search engine marketing and search engine optimization products. And that's where I feel like I really fell in love with the marketing side of things and got into that digital. What sparked my transition into the industry, I was very involved still with PRSA, the Public Relations Society of America, and they have a section for travel and tourism. And I just remember them having a really awesome conference. And I literally said to myself, what do those people do? And what job do I need to get so I can get to go to that conference? And that really sparked my interest. And I made the step over to my first DMO, which was the small suburb in Texas, Allen, Texas. And that was my first CVB.
Great. Great. And then, of course, how recently did you move over to Searchwide Global?
Well, I've been, we joke about this because it's such a great fit that it feels like I've been here forever, but I'm just shy of my year and a half mark that I've been over here with Searchwide Global.
Awesome. Okay. And what led you to say, okay, I'm going to leave the DMO world and head over to Searchwide?
It was actually really easy. They did what they do best. You know, I was recruited. They recruited me. And it was great. You know, I was very familiar with the company because I, you know, had the honor of being a 30 under 30 a few years ago. But that's when I first met Searchwide Global and just saw what they were doing for the industry and what a resource they were. When I got the call and it was for an internal position, I couldn't be more excited. So it was just a really easy decision for me.
I love it. Okay. Well, thanks for sharing that, Cambria. Mike, how about you? Tell us about your background and how you ended up as president and CEO of Searchwide Global.
Great. Thanks, Adam. And we're lucky to have Cambria. So that was a year and a half ago. That was a great day for us. I'm one of the rare ones that actually went to hotel school, Adam, you know, gosh, in the early 80s. And I'll never forget, I was at a business school at the University of Wisconsin, and called my father when I realized that I wanted to go into hotel restaurant management in the University of Wisconsin Stout, had a 4-year degree. And his first question, of course, was, are you sure they have a 4-year degree in that? And I said, yeah, Dad, pretty sure. And so I graduated and actually started working for Marriott. I was with Marriott for 9 years and was in various positions with Marriott, all in sales. So all in large hotels, and then ended up running national sales in Chicago was my last role with Marriott. And then I transitioned to the DMO sector, went to Philadelphia and was the senior VP of sales and marketing for the Philadelphia Convention and Visitors Bureau. Now that again was at the time when the Philadelphia just built the new convention center. The new Marriott was just opened. Great time to be there. Renaissance for the city. I really felt like I hit that at the right time. That was in the mid to late 90s. And then in 1999 launched Searchlight Global. So it's been a good run. You know, the reasoning behind that, it was some industry friends, one in particular, Brian Stevens, who owns Conference Direct, who whispered in my ear and said, you know, I think there's a gap in the marketplace for a good industry focused executive search firm. Why don't you think about it? And he was right. And we're still great friends 23 years later. But we really started in the hotel sector and in the then CVB sector. And today, you know, where it's more encompassing than that, but that's what really started our journey. So we started the business in Philadelphia, and we're now headquartered in Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Okay. Awesome. And Mike, as you were told that there was a gap, how did you validate that, yes, there's a gap and it would make sense for us to go ahead and take the leap of starting this company? Because I think any entrepreneur making that leap, it's always a scary and challenging decision. So How did you identify the opportunity enough to know that this was going to be a good thing and that, you know, however many years later, you'd be a leader in the industry?
Yeah, that's a great question. I sensed it on the CVB side, even though I'd only been in the sector for a few years. But we had some great hoteliers who stepped up and said, I said, if I do this, would you give us a chance? And it really was Lowe's and Starwood Hotels that said, yes, we would. And so when you have a couple of big clients and a couple of big brands that believe in you, I guess personally that we could make this work, that meant a lot to me. And that really helped to solidify the decision and to say, let's do it. If we have a couple of sectors, hotel and now DMO sector, and now, of course, it's many more than that. But that was the big reason, Adam, you know, is having a couple of friends who were in senior leadership positions with a couple of large brands that really got behind us and made a difference.
That's great. And so as far as SearchWide as an organization, you're obviously an executive search firm. What does that entail and who do you work with?
Yeah, a great question. Again, the DMO is hotels, but now we're convention centers, stadiums, arenas, experiential. So when you think Freeman and other experiential clients like that, they're big clients of ours. But it's so much more than just sourcing people and sourcing resumes. It's a really consultative process, and we're a retained firm, so we really take over the entire search for our client, and they expect us to manage that search on their behalf and bring them then the best qualified short list of candidates and really see them through the entire process until we get a signed offer. So it's so much more consultative than most think that it is, and especially when you're working with a board of directors, for instance, and a DMO who just perhaps has a leadership change, we do a deep needs assessment and really take our time to make sure that we get it right, that we understand the organization, that what's important to them, so that we can find the best leader that we can. So it's we love the variety in clients and the different sectors that we work in, but we pride ourselves in the level of service we offer and the depth of our needs assessment and understanding of their business before we start to go try to find leaders to help their business.
Great. All right. Well, it's good to have that background and understanding of SearchWide Global as an organization. Mike, I'll stick with you for one more question. And then Cambria, get ready because we're coming back at you here in just a moment. But Mike, you've obviously, in doing this for as many years as you have, you've seen the market change many times. You've seen crises hit the industry. You've seen a variety of situations. And I'm wondering, you know, I had a conversation with Don Welsh from Destinations International on my show, actually in Bloomington when I was there for the CDME classes, and he talked about, you know, we've had 30 years of crises here in the last 3 years to try to work through in the industry. So things have changed a lot. I'm wondering, with all this change, what are you seeing right now as far as trends go in the labor market that somebody that's looking to fill a position or somebody that's looking to take a position, what do they need to know?
Yeah, great question. It's this is again a really key aspect that we consult with our clients on, Adam. It's especially the expectations from the candidate and employee perspective have changed a great deal. You know, culture is extremely important. Flexibility is important. You know, people want to live their best life and have a job that fits with that, and that's at all levels. That's from entry level to CEO. And so, if you're the best employer, you really have to take stock in that and have a culture that's authentic and that people can really relate to. And so, we're spending a lot of time with our clients in our industry talking about that, especially as it relates to the generations. So, we have 4 generations in the workforce, in some cases 5. So we have to speak to all of those generations differently than we did when I was coming up. I'm a boomer that worked for a boomer. That's pretty easy. Today, not so much. So I would say that culture is you have to lead with your good culture, and you've got to have a flexible work environment, certainly, and be real empathetic to the needs of people and the fact that they want to, again, live their best life.
Great. Well, and I'm sure we'll dive a little bit more into that as the conversation goes on, but that's a good overview. Cambria, let's go to you. I'm curious, I've been seeing, and I wonder if you guys, or if this is just Adam, you know, making a false observation or if it's actually happening, but I feel like I've seen so many people in the DMO space maybe migrate from being in a DMO. I guess Cambria is a great example of this, right? Being in a DMO and then moving over to the private sector, but staying within the industry. You've got these major tech companies like Zartico, I feel like has been on a tear over the last couple of years and really pulling a lot of talent from the destination side. And of course, there's other organizations that are doing the same thing. We've actually even hired our first 2 DMO people with DMO experience in our organization in the last year and tried to recruit from that side. And so I'm wondering if you're seeing the same thing on a macro level, and I'm wondering how you feel like it is or is going to affect the industry. And Cambria, maybe we'll start with you.
Sure. Well, you're definitely not imagining it. We're seeing the same thing. And I think for our industry, it's beneficial because it's kind of the sweet spot. It's not that we're completely losing them out of the industry. And these people that have the DMO experience, it's easier when you can say, I've sat where you've sat, and you're working with clients from this side of the house, you know what it's like to maybe be in a small DMO or know what it's like to wear multiple hats. So from that perspective, I think it's very beneficial. I think the people that are recruiting from the DMOs, that's a smart move. And I think as long as we can keep them in the industry and not lose them completely, I think we'll still be in a good spot. Where I get really concerned is where we lose them from the industry and then it's so hard to try to get them back. So I think those of us that stay in, and even if it's on a different side, speaks to how much we still value the industry as a whole.
Great. Yeah, it is an interesting thought that if you look at it on a macro level, the fact that they're staying in the industry just means there's more knowledge in the industry as a whole, regardless of what side they're on. And so I think that's an insightful point, Cambria. Mike, is there anything that you want to add to that or anything you're seeing differently or want to concur with?
Yeah, I would just say, Adam, I agree with what Cambria just outlined, but things always cycle, right? And people also tend to boomerang back. And so while there will be some that take a journey into a different part of the industry, it's very likely that they boomerang back to an old job because they miss certain aspects of it. So we have seen those cycles. Don is right. We go through a lot in this industry and see a lot of things with the economy and just cycles like this. And that's what I think you're correct. I think it is happening right now. But I do think we'll see that boomerang effect actually sooner than later.
And I guess that boomerang effect, Mike, it might segue right into what my next question is here. And that's, what does this shift that's happening right now and I presented it as a fundamental shift, Mike. You're saying that it's more of a cyclical shift, and I think that makes sense. Regardless, what does what's happening right now mean for the future of the industry?
Yeah, I think it strengthens it. I think Cambria touched on it a little bit. I think that what we're trying to do, Adam, in all the jobs that we search, but especially on the DMO side, is introduce new talent that is from somewhere else that perhaps our client hasn't thought of. And when we can do that at all levels, I think that just strengthens the industry as well. When we can introduce, candidates who come either from the tech sector or perhaps healthcare or other places, and especially in marketing or sales, we all benefit from that. And so, again, I think it during a cycle like this, I think it forces you to do that, to think differently and look in different places. And so I look at it as a real plus, and we'll be better because of it.
Great. Cambria, anything to add on that?
Yeah, I just completely agree, especially I know I'm a bit partial from the marketing background, but when we look at this talent that we can bring in and just having that diverse background and those diverse experiences, it can only make the industry better, in my opinion.
Great. Now, I guess the question, though, is with that shift, and this might be in addition to the list of questions that I sent over to you guys, but with that shift that's happening, whether it's cyclical in nature or not, what do destinations need to be prepared to do then to try to retain first and then attract new talent? Because I feel like if we are getting a lot of people right now moving out of the DMO and into the private sector, there's got to be some things that the DMOs can do on their side to do a better job of retaining their talent. And then, of course, Cambria, we're going to get into how do you make yourself more attractive to talent, from whether it's from within the industry or outside.
I can start with that one. I think one, when we talk about retention first, is definitely employee engagement. You have to look inside first and make sure that the values that you're putting out there, that you say that you're about, are actually reigning true for your employees. And when I say employees, I mean all of the employees. So not maybe just your experience, but what's that experience like for the women in your company? What's that experience like for the people of color? And making sure that you have that strong employee engagement, because that's ultimately going to affect your brand. So I would say start there.
That's a great point, Cambria. I'm wondering, so how, as a leader of a DMO, as you're looking at the different groups that you might have within your organization, like you mentioned women, people of color, and there's other groups too that you want to make sure that you're providing a great experience for, how do you A, identify those groups, and B, make sure that you're crafting an experience that caters to a variety of groups that are within your organization?
Yeah, I would say you have to have a pulse, and that it's like it's your home. So you need to know what's going on there. You need to speak with them, and you need to just make sure that it's actually, relevant to them. So you may have these values, and it's not a one size fits all. That's the other thing. Like, you may have your company core values, but everyone's experience is going to be different. Where we work is such a personal experience. It's so much more than a job. So you need to really have a pulse on that. You need to have those conversations, and it needs to be genuine connections. And hopefully then it will come naturally, and you'll know when people are engaged and actually happy with what they're doing.
Great. Mike, anything to add there?
Yeah. Cambria's smiling. Yeah, she knows I definitely have something to add there. She's right on. People want a seat at the table, Adam. They want their voice to be heard, and they want to work for companies that have values that are meaningful. CSR is important. DE&I is important. We run a company at Searchwide Global that majority of our team is under 35, and their voice is heard. Everyone's voice is heard. And I think the DMOs, they really have to practice that. And I think many of them have done a great job of that. But if you want to retain and nurture your talent, especially your younger talent, those things are critically important to them. And we have to listen and be intentional when we listen. And it doesn't mean that we're going to do everything that they need or require, but we need to meet halfway on certain things. And again, listen to the voice and let their voice be heard. Really important.
So I like that, Mike. I try in this show to make sure that I'm giving the people that are listening some actionable takeaways. And I think we've reached a point in the conversation where this could be an actionable takeaway. So I'm wondering, what are some examples of destinations that you feel like have built a framework for listening to their employees in such a way that the employees either want to stay and other employees want to go there because of the culture they've created? Any examples you can give me?
Oh yeah, I certainly do. One in particular is Elliot in DC. For years, he's given the mid-level managers of his organization frequent access to him so that he can listen to their ideas. And his leaders aren't intimidated by that. I stole that idea from him. I do that at Searchlight Global now. I spend a lot of time with our non-VPs in the company so that I can hear what they're thinking, what they're working on, what's important to them. And Elliot was the one, he's been doing that for years. And it really allows everyone to say, gosh, he does care. He is listening. And he's able to act on some of these great ideas that are now bubbling up directly to him instead of coming through the typical vertical channel. But that's one example. And one more that I'll give you is that for us, we have a weekly team meeting. And someone on the team runs that meeting every week. So from a part-time associate to me, they pair up with someone else and they love having ownership in that. So it's their agenda. It is their opportunity to run the team meeting every Monday. And they love that engagement. They love that empowerment. So those are a couple of examples that we've seen that have worked really well.
Great. And hopefully our listeners are taking notes on those two examples, because I think they're great examples. Cambria, you think of brand as an external facing part of your organization, right? In my book, I call it the sum of all the touch points your organization has with the outside world. But I feel like inevitably, destinations tend to look at it in terms of the visitor. And you talk to me a lot about brand is just as important in recruiting labor and talent to your organization as it is to recruiting visitors to your organization. And so what I'm wondering is, how does brand play into the recruiting process? And what do you do with destinations to help them make sure that they are creating a brand that's attractive enough to get some of these employees that you're helping recruit to want to go to that destination?
Absolutely. It's very important. And I think we are also good at marketing our destinations, and it usually is visitor first. And it's a lot of crossover. Some of the same things that make a destination attractive to a visitor will be the same that makes it attractive to a potential employee. And we know the cycle, that it all starts with a visit. So for a certain degree, we use that. When I'm creating the marketing materials, I want those beautiful visuals. I want your destination video, because we want to introduce this to the candidate and kind of get them attracted. But in the same vein, it's also important to have an employer brand. So for that, I think it's important that we kind of shift our messaging and make sure that we're gearing it towards that audience, because then people want to know what's in it for them. That's great that they'll know kind of what you'll have to offer for the visitor, and they'll join that force and join that team to do that. But first, we have to say, what's in it for them? What's in it for them and their family? Because that's the other thing I think sometimes we forget. A lot of times in our jobs, especially at the executive level, we may ask these people to relocate, and it's not just them. They're bringing a family with them. So what does the school district look like? What is their day-to-day life going to be like in the community? So we have to speak to that as well. And I think it's important to blend both the destination brand and your employer brand together.
Okay. So let's say I'm a destination. I guess I work at a destination or running a destination, I should say. Anyway, I'm getting beyond myself here. But let's say that I'm running a destination, not a beach destination, not a mountain destination, and I'm trying to make myself as attractive as possible to potential candidates. So once you get beyond the product, what can you do from a branding perspective to really focus on getting candidates to want to come and work and live in your destination?
So just listening through that, if that was my creative brief, I would go to, what's your community like? Because I'm saying, if you don't have the beach, you don't have the mountains, I'm guessing maybe you have a really great experience within the community, some great stories to tell there. So I would probably lead with that. And then again, if you're trying to make yourself attractive to talent, I would say, what do you have to offer them as far as their work experience? And we know some of the beginning conversations these days, especially for the younger generations, are starting with the hybrid work environment. So because you're not one of those maybe front-facing beach mountain destinations, would they be able to have kind of a hybrid work-life balance? What type of benefits would you offer to them just as an employee, and what their experience would be like within the organization? Do your employees just really love working together? Do you have a great company culture? I would lead more with that if we don't necessarily have like those great visuals to start with.
Great. And Cambria, you've inspired another question here for me that, okay, I want to dive into. And that's, how could destinations better leverage their website to attract talent?
You know, I think we have some very creative ways that people have done this. And I wish I could think of some examples right off top. But destination websites can almost serve as relocation guides. And I think it's really a great idea to actually have a section for that. So we know we have our different things for visitors, things to do in those different subsections. But what about a section that talks about the lifestyle there? I think that's something that we could do because, again, you have all these great materials already, but you just need to shift the messaging to this audience. And I think if we lead with that and say, just as much as it's a great place to visit, this would be a really great place for you to live, and maybe give some of those stats, too, about the community and what it's like for people who actually work there, and even some of that lifestyle stuff with the school districts, cost of living. That's another one that's important that we have to consider, especially with the current market. So I think that's something that's maybe a bit innovative that we could do a better job of showing.
Yeah, I think we've reached another possible action item for those that might be listening. Take a look at your website, and if there's no content about what it's like to live there as opposed to visiting, maybe it's time for us to take a close look at our website and say, have we built this only for visitors, or are we actually making it a resource to build our brand for those that might potentially want to work or live here someday? And that seems like you said, Cambria, a relocation guide on a destination website actually seems like a brilliant addition to any destination website. Okay, I think that's been a really good discussion, Cambria, because it was eye-opening for me as you and I talked before the show to hear just how much branding and marketing can be valuable far beyond visitors, but actually to attract talent. And I appreciate you touching on that. Mike, I want to go back to you with a couple of questions that people might have. And I think the first one is there still a labor shortage as it pertains to our industry?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Adam, listen, we've got a big frontline labor shortage of about 1.2 million to be exact, and an entry-level management shortage. You know, our leadership pipeline in all sectors in travel is concerning. It's thinning. You know, the demographics aren't on our side here. As boomers continue to retire, we'll have to work harder to find young leaders who are going to start to move into those roles. So I would say from frontline and entry level management, yes. And this will likely be an issue for quite some time. And what can we do? Well, we've just got to be more creative about where we look for talent, how we find new talent, where are the transferable skills, industries that are similar that we could pull talent, what are the ideal positions that we could bring people over from other industries and quickly train. And those are a lot of the things that we're working on. But yeah, it's I think for some time we'll be faced with this again, just purely because of the demographics and the way in which our leadership pipeline is thinning in all sectors of the greater industry.
Well, and that leads me to another question then, Mike. Would you say that for maybe people that have been working in a destination that haven't considered themselves ready for early management and instead are working like more of the entry-level jobs, and entry-level is probably a little early for this, but maybe somebody that's been in a role for a couple of years that hasn't felt like they are ready for something like that, wouldn't this be a good argument that it's never too early to try and go for some of these positions that they might feel like outweigh their experience a little bit, but man, could be a great opportunity to jumpstart a career in leadership?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we often encourage, you know, especially the CEOs, to try to let their younger leaders cross-train and give them leadership experience. I mean, give them people to that will report up to them, budgets to manage. It's extremely important. So no, Adam, I think you're right. I think that we have to look for those opportunities because we know where we can insert great talent. It's often hard to insert new leaders into the DMO sector at the CEO level. So it's better to do it in the sales, especially on the sales side, perhaps sales leadership on the marketing side, especially digital marketing. What a great opportunity to bring other talent from other industries. And we're seeing a lot of that into the digital marketing arena who can work their way up through the marketing channel of a destination. So yeah, I think those are a couple of things to stay front and center on our radar, I think at all levels.
Yeah, so if you're listening, apply for the job. If it interests you and intrigues you, apply. The worst they can say is no. And what a great opportunity if there is a shortage of early management. Give it a shot. And I hope that anybody listening that might be on the fence might be willing to do that. the next question I have is, and you've touched on this, is, hey, we've got to be creative and find labor from other markets if we are having a thinning of portions of our workforce. And I'm seeing that at the macro level, major tech companies are laying off a lot of people right now. And that can be viewed, and I think a lot of people are viewing it as a real problem for our economy. My question is, could we be viewing this in the tourism industry as an opportunity to say, you've already been in the tech industry and made the tech money that's out there, the monopoly money that's been used to pay some of these tech employees. How about now you work in an experience instead of in a job? And can we maybe convert some of these people that have gotten out of these high-pressure, high-tech jobs and say, hey, why don't you slow down, have a better experience, have a better time, and contribute to an industry that is hungry for your expertise?
Mm-hmm. Adam, first and foremost, this downturn in tech is going to be to the advantage of our industry, right? These are pandemic darlings that were very hot. And now the disposable income is going to be is being spent on travel, which many of the travel CEOs have noted that. But as it relates to talent, I was at a couple of industry events just the last 10 days, and the anecdotal stories that I'm hearing, especially about the industry-related tech companies that are picking up some of this tech talent, it's really overwhelming of the number of examples. So I think you're right. I think that not just for the tech companies, industry-related tech companies, I think the DMOs have a great opportunity to look to some of this tech talent that has perhaps either been downsized or is looking for a change. I think you're right on. I think this could be this downturn, as unfortunate as it is for the tech industry, is in many ways going to benefit our industry.
Interesting. Okay, Cambria, how about you?
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think every time I see one of those headlines, why it's so unfortunate that they're having these big layoffs, I saw it as an opportunity. Like, how great would it be to get these people with that type of background into these destinations? And yeah, they'll have a much better work-life experience. We know the things that we love about our industry. And I think that's our selling point.
Great. Well, you guys, this has been incredibly insightful for me. And selfishly, another question that I have is, I know that you help destinations, I know that you help the hotel industry, and you mentioned a couple of the other parts of the industry that you service. I'm wondering if you help small businesses like mine recruit from other parts of the industry, or is that something that you haven't really opened up yet?
Oh, we do, Adam. Yeah, you bet. In fact, we've got a couple of tech jobs open right now. We've done work for agencies in our industry, and yeah, any companies that are serving the greater travel, tourism, hospitality industry, we can be a resource. So, absolutely.
Great. Yeah, I guess that's a conversation we'll have offline here.
Yeah.
Well, guys, like I said, it's been great to have you on. Is there anything I haven't asked you that you think would benefit the audience to be able to hear, whether it's about the labor market or your organization, or any kind of parting words of wisdom you'd like to give?
I really think we covered it. This has been really great talking with you.
Yeah, Adam, we can't thank you enough. The last thing I guess I would say is that authenticity when it comes to your culture and walking the talk is a difference maker when it comes to recruiting and retaining talent. And it's just an important thing to remember.
Well, you guys, this has been a lot of fun. If people want to learn more about either of you individually or Searchwide Global as an organization, what's the best way for them to do so?
Absolutely. I would say visit our website, searchwideglobal.com, and it has all of our contact information and our full team on there.
Great. Well, thanks again for coming on. It's been really valuable, and I wish you all the best as we continue to push this industry forward.
Thank you, Adam.
Thank you.
And thanks, everybody, for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please don't forget to leave us a rating or a review. It helps us continue to bring you amazing guests like Cambria and Mike. Thanks, everybody, and have a great day.